हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
The word ekatvam in this mantra does not establish an absolute identity between the individual soul and the supreme soul. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains. To use another example, the quantity of salt present in a drop is never compared to the quantity of salt present in the complete ocean. But the salt present in the drop is qualitatively equal in chemical composition to all the salt present in the ocean. If the individual living being were equal to the Supreme Lord both qualitatively and quantitatively, there would be no question of his being under the influence of the material energy. In the previous mantras, it has already been discussed that no living being, not even the powerful demigods, can surpass the Supreme Being in any respect. Therefore, ekatvam does not mean that a living being is equal in all respects to the Supreme Lord. In the footnote, this is confirmed by Vedanta Deshika, who writes in his commentary, the word oneness, ekatvam, does not mean only one entity and nothing else, but rather one entity with everything else as its attributes, because there is no statement in this book which negates the statement in the verse, everything is pervaded by the Lord. And it would be impossible to begin teaching about such an absolute oneness, since a person would have to admit duality in the form of knowledge and ignorance concerning the falsity of all experience, even to begin teaching. Okay, so here he's saying is that we can't take it that it's all one. He's making the point. Because it's already been stated, I mean, we can't take it that the soul in that, because it says he pervades everything, so that would include the living entities. Then the problem is to study this. The other problem comes is if you're going to learn about such absoluteness, then you have to start from the premise that you don't know. Right? So the teacher knows, you don't know. So right there, you're admitting to duality. So where's the oneness? So in the same way, God is a complete whole, and the living entity is a part. So in the same way is the element of you know or don't know. Does that make sense? So right there is the impersonalist by saying everything is one. Then if it's all one, why do you have to learn it? Right? That you have to learn it means it's not all one. You can say it's ignorance, but the point is your ignorance is something different from the absolute truth. Right? And if it is part of the absolute truth, and therefore the same, why the big thing about spiritual life? Why do you have to liberate yourself? Right? If it's all one. So in any case, Vedanta is pointing out that it's not going to, this kind of approach is not going to work. Right? The Mayavadis always try to prove that they are identical with God, and are therefore the only real thing in existence, one without a second. They claim this concept to be the highest stage of theism. Quote, indeed, whereas atheism believes only in the world and not at all in God, An ordinary theism believes in both, the world and God. Shankara believes only in God. For him, God is the only reality. This view also marks the highest extension of the ordinary religious emotions towards God, for it points to a stage where love of God becomes absolute, suffering neither the ego nor the world. Right? If this type of faith is to be distinguished from ordinary theism, or belief in personal God, the word for it should be not atheism, but rather supertheism. So, yeah. So technically then, what's happening is your atheist says there's no God. Right? There's only the world. And the theist then says there's God and the world. But now Shankara is saying there is no world, there's only God. So technically speaking, he can't be categorized as an atheist. Because his point is there is only God. Right? But the difficulty is his followers are atheists. You know, that's the thing. So Shankara we don't have any problem with. We have problem with the people who follow him. Right? Because he's saying everything is God, which we also say. But at the same time, as he doesn't mention the other part of the difference, that he is also at the same time different from his creation. So the part that Krishna is non-different from his creation, that he's non-dual, that we also agree with, just he doesn't present the other half. So therefore his followers become bewildered. And in this way they take on an atheistic nature, because they don't actually accept the full qualities of Godhead. So therefore they can't understand the world, they can't understand who they are, and all this. One can only wonder how it is possible to encounter entities like emotions towards God and love of God right there in the free of duality's realm of Nirguna Brahman. Since the Mayavadis fancied themselves to be identical with the Lord in all respects, the correct description of their philosophy should not be supertheism, but rather super-false egoism, as the American psychologist and philosopher William James put it. An absolute one and I that one, surely we have a religion which emotionally considers as a high pragmatic value. See, because he's considering I am that one, but you have to be something else to consider you're that one. And to be so committed to it, then you have to have a lot of ego in that. So they're saying there is no emotion, but there must be so much to actually have that much commitment to think that the small has become God. Right. So then here, okay, so then this point then is that the ekatvam here then does not mean so in other words, they're one in interests, right? Because we're discussing the devotees now. So that one is in interest, not in their how you say, quantity. So because quality is, there's a oneness. So there's enough common to create a relationship. But because quantity is not the same, therefore then the living entity is junior. Because it's Prabhupada points out very nicely when he says that, you know, if he was the same, then he wouldn't be bewildered. Right? So even in his making of a projection of some theoretical, you know, concept, still he's showing that by doing that, still, if he was like God, he wouldn't be bewildered, because God's not bewildered. So if you're bewildered, you can't be God. Right? Basic kind of logic. Right? So the devotee then sees the oneness means their interest, based on the relationship, is the same. But in tattva, they're not the same. Right? Just like the parent and the child, then there's a commonality. So there's a relationship. But they're not equal. Right? The child doesn't have the same status as the parent. Right? But it doesn't mean that a relationship can't go on very nicely. So the whole point is that Krishna has expanded the creation for a relationship, not for tattva. Right? Tattva is already there. He already is happy in that tattva. That's called the Atmarama. So he's already self-satisfied. But he expands the creation for relationship. Right? because he and his energy is already non-different. So that aspect's already being tasted. But to taste the relationship with those energies, he's expanded. So therefore, then, the point for us is the oneness based on identical interest. That's the useful thing. Right? These other things aren't so useful. Right? Because going to be God, he's already taken care of that and doing a better job. So that's not going to be a platform. So then that ends that second, the seventh mantra. And then that mentality of the devotee. Then the eighth mantra. If one is actually qualified, he must be able to see the Lord as the transcendental and eternal Supreme Person. The Lord is unembodied, which means that there is no difference between his soul and body. His senses are interchangeable, as in confirmed in Brahma Samhita. At the request of the Acharyas, the Lord descends in his deity form, which is non-different from his original spiritual form. Unfortunately, the materialists and the materialistic devotees, Kanishta Adhikaris, cannot accommodate the fact that the Lord can be transcendental and immanent at the same time. So in the footnote, according to the HarperCollins Dictionary of Philosophy, page 120, the philosophy of theism in most interpretations is, God is partly immanent in the universe and partly transcendent. In essence, this definition is the Vedic philosophy of the Supreme Person, as stated in the Purusha Shukta, Rigveda 10.94. With three fourths of himself, the Purusha ascended. The other force was born here. From here on all sides, he moved towards the living and the non-living. Again and again... Again and again in the Vedic literatures, we find references to Tripada Vibhuti and Ekapada Vibhuti, the three-fourths of the Lord's splendor displayed as the spiritual world and the one-fourth by which he pervades the material world. About the material manifestation, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 10.41, know that all these opulent and beautiful and gorgeous creations are born from a part of my total splendor. End quote. Because they oppose theism, the theories of deism, monism, pantheism, and dualism are actually atheism. Deism separates God completely from his material creation. Monism renders God partless. Pantheism confines him to the material world, and dualism divides creation against him, placing part of it in the hands of a rival. Even major religions, traditions like Christianity, are influenced by deism and dualism, right? Because God is completely separate, therefore then Satan runs the world, so he's not actually in control of it. So if we say God's in control of everything, why wouldn't he be in control of Maya also? Right? Because so what's coming out here is that you have this element. See, is that he's mentioned here the atheist, but he's also means the atheist and the materialistic devotees. Is that the element that God is his creation, that sometimes evades us, because we want to say, means make the point that he is the purest. He is. But at the same time, as he has expanded his energies, means not he as Bhagavan, but his energies have entered into everything, and so he controls it, and it's non-different from him. So then the difficulty comes as though we read it and go by it, but it says he is the cheater of cheats, right? But if we, so we can say this, and devotees will happily say this, you know, of aquatics he is the shark, of the mountains he is the Himalayas. You know, he is the taste in water, we'll always say that. But what does that mean? That means the potency that allows the cheater to actually get away with what he does because of his cleverness. That's Krishna. So right there, now we have a problem. Why? Because of this deism. That God, no, God can't be involved like that. Right? And then the other, carrying it further, it goes on here, but... It's then the interesting part is then because of this, because God has to be all good, which he is, but it doesn't mean the bad doesn't come from him also. But because he has to be all good, then goodness, just the concept of good, whatever we take as good, that has to be elevated to the transcendental platform. Right? Does that make sense? So being good, being nice, is considered spiritual. So that means morality, ethics, justice becomes transcendental. So that means political correctness is a spiritual platform. You understand what's happening? But it doesn't come from our religion. This is not our religion. These are combinations of other religions due to people's previous conditioning. Right? Because this deism, what did we say? What was the words? Deism and, what was the thing? And dualism. These don't come with us. We understand that the Lord is non-dual, so he has his energies. He's expanded into that, so it's non-different from him. At the same time, he as a person is separate, but not as his energies is he separate. Right? So it has both of them there. And he is involved in the creation, at the same time he's not. It's all going on because of his energies. And his energies make everything happen. Like Prabhupada's in Calcutta when the Japanese were bombing Calcutta. Right? And so he's seeing it's Krishna in the form of these bombs. Right? That destructive nature, that ability to do all that, that's still Krishna's potency. But he said it's not a very nice form of Krishna. So everything is Krishna, but there's nicer forms and not nicer forms, right? Because nice means what's near to Braja Krishna, and not nice is the farther away you get from that. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty comes is then we can't discern between what is actually material and what is spiritual. So on a normal platform, a very nice experience, a very peaceful experience is considered spiritual. The person goes out into the forest, and then, you know, just awakens from, you know, all the craziness from the city life and all that, and just notices the forest and just that peaceful in that moment, has no worry or care, then they'll call that an epiphany. Right? A great spiritual experience. When all it was is they bumped into the mode of goodness that happens to be out in the forest, that if you, you know, go out there and notice it, you know, then it's there. Of course, when you're driving on the highway, it's harder, you know. So all it was is they bumped into, and that potency is Krishna. Right? So by appreciating it, they make advancement because it is connected to Krishna. They're moving forward. But it's not going to give you bhakti. It's not going to give you God realization. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is it lack of knowledge of the form of Bhagavan that leads to this atheism and inchristianity or impersonalism? Because they don't actually know it?
Lack of knowledge, that would be the one aspect. The two is that it's not well known. This is like devotees, like we were mentioning. They may have all this knowledge about Krishna, but at the same time as they'll place morality and justice on the same level as bhakti, which, you know, it's like night and day, but they'll put them as equal because, you know, devotional service is good and being moral and just is good, so therefore they're equal, right? A equals B equals C. But in this case, it's not. It's that it may be a better ideal medium to connect to Krishna, to show your devotion, that you're going to do service to Krishna, so you use something nice for Krishna. But the actual point of devotion is, did you do it for Krishna? You know what I'm saying? Like there's that story of the thief. He comes into the deity room, right, to steal from the deities. But on the way out, then he notices that one stone on the floor has come out of place in the floor, and he fixes that before he leaves. And he closes the door nicely. So that was all in consideration of the deity. So that was devotion. The stealing was not. You know what I'm saying? But we would categorize that he's all bad. But here he's done some service. So the whole idea is that if it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. If it's not connected to Krishna, it has no use. It may be nice, no use. Right? You can buy all kinds of, you know, how you say, tchotchkes. And some of them are very nice tchotchkes. You know what I'm saying? You can get a very nice, crystal parrot. You know, it'll cost you quite a few thousands of dollars, but it really doesn't have a purpose. You know what I'm saying? So it's a nice tchotchke. Well, you can go out and buy some little plastic thing like that. Not as nice tchotchke. Does that make sense? But that's the whole point, is any nice quality, any good character, anything, if it's not connected to Krishna, technically is useless. Right? But because of our attachment, we can't let go of that. So that's why it says, kanista, materialistic. That's the materialistic part. The part that they have faith in Krishna, that they chant, they're committed to Krishna, want to develop love for Krishna. That's the solid, that's the devotee part. But the materialism is still this mistake in actually the philosophy, is that they haven't technically understood what is religion. And so then religion just becomes a form of something to do nice and be good. But that's not good enough. Right? Sub-religion isn't religion. Right? And religion is for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. So that would mean sub-religion is to be used to support religion to serve the Lord. But right there, it's already another step away. And through religion, by following it properly with knowledge of the Lord, with detachment, you can free yourself from material existence. So that's your moksha. Right? On the transcendental platform, you can perform, very nice devotional service. Right? Then it becomes very dynamic. Before that, in the conditioned state, it's also quite good. But it still is not as dynamic as when you're freed and you're on the transcendental platform. So that means, therefore, religion, by proper application, then supports and gains liberation. So and the upadharmas, or from the platform, morality, justice, all those things, those support religion. Right? So already it's three stages away, so you can't compare them. Right? It's junior to religion. And the interesting thing is generally those who profess the morality, justice, all those things, the most are the ones that are most opposed to religion. They don't like the Vedic system. They don't like Varnashram. So then they actually don't know, because religion means understanding the nature of something. So they don't understand the nature. So that's the problem here, is not understood the nature. We don't understand the full nature of Godhead. So then the deism, that he can't be connected with the material world. Right? We don't understand as his energy. And then you put something like Satan as the lord of the material energy. And he acts independently from God. But that if God is the supreme controller, it means he controls him too. You know what I'm saying? So there's so many contradictory elements here that they can't bring together. But like you said, it's due to lack of knowledge. But that's why we study the philosophy. Because otherwise we're going to say, oh, it's gyan or this or that. But how many make these mistakes? And because of that, then put something of a mundane quality first before devotional service. And then in that way, especially if it's applied in your own life, that's one thing. But if you apply it on others' life, then there may be offense. And once that happens, then the whole process starts to get thrown off. Right? Fortunately, most don't take sense gratification as spiritual. Like that. So you don't have that aspect yet. But there are philosophies to counter that, because there are people who do. But generally devotees don't do that. So that's why we only discuss down to that level. If someone ever wonders why we always bring up the element of artha trying to replace religion, it's because it's what's being done. You know what I'm saying? Generally no one tries to take sense gratification and replace religion. Because most devotees can't even understand sense gratification. Because the point is, if it's connected to the Lord, then it has use. If it's not, it's not. But if it's sense gratification, it's bad. Right? But starting at pranamoy, then it's good, because it's for others. So it's nice and good. So then they can't distinguish between the spiritual. So you have a lot of not applying intelligence. Because intelligence means you can discriminate. And if you can't discriminate, means in that area the intelligence is not developed. Right? Just because you're smart in one thing doesn't mean you're good in all things. Right? Somebody's very good at flying an airplane, but it doesn't necessarily mean he can play Monopoly. Right? His 6-year-old son can beat him. So if he claims that, no, because I'm smart in one thing, I'm smart in all things, then he has to be a fool. Right? So that's the thing, is then we have to know, is we may be expert in some area, but we may not be expert in all areas. So those are the areas we learn. Yes.
Why does Krishna's Paramatma enter the material world, since
in the Brahman feature is energy and all that, but it's not so much, that's not being, the personal element is not being addressed. But the point is we as a person want something, right? So therefore, we as a person then are dealt with by a person and it's approved or not. And then a person affects that, right? The material energy, she affects that. And then it goes back down to energies again. Because right? Then the three modes of nature will work. Does that make sense? So the potency is there. It's what you do with it. It's what it, whether it's what mode it's under. It's not the modes are separate. Modes run everything anyway because they're the reflections of the samvit, sandini, and hladini potencies. Right. So when those potencies act on the internal potency, then they come out in the spiritual form. If the same potencies act on the material, they come out as the three modes of nature. So it will act under that anyway. So what it's acting under isn't really the consideration. Right? More important is what mode you're under when you're using it. Right? Then next is, what mode is the thing that you're using in Krishna's service? The more it's towards goodness, the better. Right? Like that. Or even if it's something in passion or ignorance, you're dealing with it in the proper attitude. So that purifies it. Does that make sense? So you have the material energy that you're dealing with that's running under its mode. You're cutting a potato. So you could say is, one is that you're doing this for Krishna. It's it's a religious activity, right? It's a ritual. Therefore, then it would be goodness, right? Means we're just putting aside that we're doing this for Krishna, so it's devotion. But we're taking what's going on there is the religious act is properly be going on, maintenance of cleanliness, you know, proper foodstuffs are used and all that. So So that's mode of goodness. That you're creating something, you're going to create a preparation, that's the mode of passion. Right? That you're taking the potato, cutting it up, you have the element of that is goodness that is being done in a ritual, passion that so there's an activity going on, but ignorance, you're destroying the form of the potato. Right? And then you're going to recreate it through passion into something else. So that's not really the consideration. You know those things, it makes it easier to work with material energy, of course. Right? But the main thing is what mentality you're in when you're doing that, then we call the activity in goodness, passion, or ignorance. Right? You're cooking for Krishna, that'll be devotion or pure goodness. Right? Someone's just cooking because that's the way the Shastras say, and they're performing that's goodness. They're performing that because the Shastra says, but they want the result for themselves, that's passion, or they're just cooking for their own self, you know, so it has that desire, the passion, but because there's no connection to any form of Shastra and all that, then there'll be ignorance. You know, does that make sense? So therefore, the religious people will be proper, means following the Vedic, will be in goodness and pure goodness. And those who are not will be in passion and ignorance. But the modes that govern the action itself is another thing. Just like a cow. The body of the cow functions under the control of the mode of goodness. Right? But what mode is the soul that resides in that body of a cow? They're in ignorance. Otherwise, why are they a cow? If they were in goodness, they'd be a human being. But their body is controlled by goodness. That's why they act in that way. You know what I'm saying? So you have these different, so being able to split this, one can tell the quality of something. Right? So that's why you have these later chapters of Gita then discuss these things. So detail we'll get into, you know, as we get to those later chapters. But right now is the point with this Isha-Upanishad is to be able to understand who this Isha is. If he's Isha of everything, how is he Isha of everything? Right? Does that make sense? So he as a person deals with the person. Because if he could do it through his energies and not get involved, but the point is the living entities are important to him. Therefore he does it himself. But he's unaffected. You get something according to what you deserve, your previous actions. So he's impartial. You want something bad, if you deserve that bad, you'll get it. If you don't deserve it, you won't get it. You want something good, you deserve it, you'll get it. You want something good, you don't deserve it, you won't get it. So it's all based on your action. Right? You come into the shop, you have 100 rupees, you want to buy something for 100 rupees, you get it. You come into the shop with 100 rupees, you want something for 1,000 rupees, you don't get it. You know, it's just very, very straightforward. Right? It's not actually complicated. Does that make sense? The complication is, you know, us thinking we're God. That's the part that makes it complicated. Okay. Yes.
Could you please say what's the difference between deism and dualism?
Deism means that God is, means in other words, you take all these things they're actually taking from our philosophy, but they take only one part of it, so then it gets called by that. You know, just like means in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, they're doing activities for Krishna, mm-hmm. right? And they're using their intelligence how to do it nicely for Krishna, right? And they're totally absorbed in Krishna and meditating upon Krishna, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So that means the action part, that when it's removed, when you remove Krishna consciousness from that, that becomes karma. The knowledge part, you remove Krishna from it, that becomes jnana. And the meditation, when you remove Krishna from it, becomes the jnana. So you have karma, jnana, and jnana yogas, right? So they're known as separate entities, mm-hmm. right? Someone's a karma yogi because he's performing karma, but not connected to Krishna. If it's connected to Krishna, you wouldn't call him a karma yogi, you call him a bhakti yogi. Mm. Right? Yeah. So in the same way as all these philosophies, they're coming from the original philosophy. So when they accept that God, is special and, the part about he's transcendental to the material world and untouched by material activities and all that, but only that much. They don't understand how his energies make everything work here, right?
Yeah.
Then, because they'll say he is a person, which we agree, but that's the deism, because they only see he is transcendental. But his potencies make everything here work. Means whatever is here is his potency. Mm-hmm. It's not a separate potency. Right? So they can't accommodate or deal with the element of the devil. Right? They can't deal with that element. Right? The dualist says, that there's two things. There's God and there's the world, and they're separate. Right? Because
okay.
The deism, you just deal with him as a person or inspired, it's more emotional. The dual, then there's the material world, and that's God, Satan. And then you have God, in his kingdom, right? Mm-hmm. So then it's a problem. God's upset and the devil's laughing. Make your choice which one you want to work with. Right? So it's a problem. Does that make sense? So they're just taking different parts of what we say. But the point is the material energy is its own thing. But it's functioning under Krishna's energy. It's still under his control through his energies. So they're unable to catch this, so they come up with these. More will be described here. Then we can discuss it more. Does that make sense? Okay. Cannot be transcendental and immanent at the same time. Because
one of the major characteristics of has a great faith in the deity.
He has a great faith in the deity. That's there. He has the faith in the deity. But the point is we already gave example of moralism. Or okay, the deity is there, then he's made out of what? We're not talking about him. He knows how he thinks. The problem is how you think. Okay, so it's material elements. So that means he's the deity and the material elements at the same time. Right? So because he's those material elements at the same time, that's why you use lemon and tilak to polish him. Right? So then you have to get in there and polish and scrub and actually get in there. You know, but if you don't get in there, then it's because it's simultaneous. You know what I'm saying? Yes, no?
Yeah, this is clear.
So what's not clear?
I mean, but if you can see that both the spiritual and the material person is defeated for why he cannot see.
Why he cannot see? Because the deity is direct, chanting Hare Krishna, the deity, the Shastra, association of the devotees living in the Dham. Generally those are pretty direct, straightforward. Something that's connected with these, very obviously, that works very nice. But as soon as he's not doing something so obvious, when it's indirect, that's when the problem starts. Right? That's why in the second canto then so much emphasis is put on this ability to be able to see Krishna directly and indirectly in his creation. Right? He, as a person, at the same time, he is his energies. Right? So they're not different, at the same time, there is difference. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because that's where the problem comes, is it works great as a philosophy, but when it comes to applying it in their life, that's where it breaks down. You know, that's natural, because you learn something, it's only you can test it when you apply it. So when you apply it, then you see where the weakness is. So then the idea is then you'll contemplate it and, you know, try to learn more and try to improve the practice. And then gradually, whatever is lacking, that's what you gain. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's important that the practice is done in connection with knowledge. Does that make sense? Because with that knowledge, then it starts to work. Otherwise, then it doesn't work so good. Does that make sense? Because if it's just sentiment, that's okay as long as that sentiment basically projects you into the Uttamadhikari platform immediately. Then that's kind of sentiment we offer our obeisances to. But if it doesn't project you immediately into the Uttama platform, then the problem is that sentiment can get swayed, because the mind is influenced by its environment, its surroundings. So unless you have good philosophy to be able to distinguish the surroundings, you can't tell the difference. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, let us say you see that there's a person having trouble. Right? Let's say there's a bunch of devotees at the temple and they're having trouble moving something or doing something. And you're walking by. Okay, now basically everyone would agree the good thing is to help, right? Because devotees help each other. Okay, now that's a good sentiment, and the stronger that is, the more you're going to use it and actually help devotees, right? But now, what is the basis of your having that sentiment, I should help devotees? What's the basis of that? That's where you start making the distinction between the Kanistha, the Madhyama, and the Uttama. You understand? Because if it's because, well, it's good, it's right, it's proper. No, it's because that's what Shastra says you're supposed to do. That's what Krishna expects. Right? As a brahmachari, you learn that you don't sit around while other brahmacharis do work. If you're there, you help them, even if it's not your service. That's the rule. So that means all the other, you know, seven aspects of varnashram follow that rule. Right? Because whatever a brahmachari does is what you're going to do in any other form that you're going to be involved in, right? Okay. So that's Krishna's rule. That's the way he likes it. That's why we do it. Not because it's good and nice. You understand? All the good and nice, that concept comes from Krishna. Right? But because for many, doing it just because God likes it isn't enough for them. Right, so I have to bring it down to the mundane platform of, it's a nice thing to do, it creates some feeling in the heart. That's why I'm inspired. You understand? So if you take that and connect it to Krishna, that's good. You know what I'm saying? So as long as you are connecting it to Krishna, it works fine. But if there arises a situation that is not connected to Krishna, then it's a nice thing to do, but it has no spiritual value. But that's at the point where there may be this mistake made between the spiritual and material, and they think they're still being spiritual. You know what I'm saying? Why do devotees to stupid prasad? Right? Why? Okay. No, then that's how, you know, many devotees in the temple would understand it. How does the person in charge of ISKCON communications interpret it? It's a good, nice thing that others will recognize as a religious activity, and they'll think we're also religious and this and that. So they're not even actually even... The purpose is to bring it that spiritual will be brought out into the open, but their actual motivation is not spiritual. Does that make sense? This is where he's talking about the kinesthetic artist. Does that make sense? So that distribution of prasad in that mentality is a pious work, and the people will get agyata sukriti for it. But it's only the person who understands this is the Lord's mercy that those persons will turn that agyata sukriti into bhakti. The others never will be able to do it. You understand the difference? So that's what's being talked about. Very fine points. Very fine points, yes.
But that may be applied for all types of services, whether it be prasad or bhakti sivosha.
Anything.
Or
anything.
You have a temple commander, he wants to get the job done.
Anything. That's the whole point. Is that we're trying to distinguish. Otherwise, how do you get from a kanista to a madhyam unless you understand the difference? Because that's the point, is the madhyama has knowledge. So he sees it connected to Krishna, though through knowledge. Right? It doesn't necessarily have that driving emotion. You know, that's more what you call the raganuga. Is that but the point is if it's only I've got this done, I've been told to do this, so that he's doing it, he's being engaged, that's spiritual. And he engages the other devotees, that's spiritual. They'll all get the spiritual benefit on that level. But in the level of his consciousness in which he performs it, that he may not get much benefit for. Right? Because he just sees the mat, which is fine in the beginning. That's why the process is so perfect. Whether you have the consciousness or not, it still works. But the point is if you want to make it more dynamic, or you want to make sure you stay in the process, at some point you have to start making the distinction. Otherwise, like, you know what I'm saying, then you're mature, then you can function on your own. Otherwise, then you'll always be dependent that if someone else who knows what they're doing doesn't tell you what to do, you won't actually know what to do. And for some situations, as a brahmacharya, that's okay. But as you grow up, especially as grihasthas, they have to be able to use this distinction because they're on their own a lot. They don't have, you know, a temple president or some senior man there telling them what to do at all situations. So they themselves are supposed to be mature enough and trained to be able to distinguish that.
Yes. Otherwise, if the junior, usually the scenario is the junior person is out there executing, mm-hmm. they're doing. But by doing the yagya, many times the realization is more mm-hmm. than a person who might be administrating mm-hmm. and who might just see the PR, the money, mm-hmm. stuff mm-hmm. is moving around mm-hmm. the way it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But then you got a problem, because you have people who are so-called neophytes, but they're getting great realization and great taste, and they see things in a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And you have people who are senior, maybe by age or by status, but their level of realization might not necessarily be the same.
Yeah.
And then you run into
You run into conflict, but why? Technically, you run into conflict in one sense, but in another sense, why you don't run into conflict is because that junior person, because of his realization, follows the etiquette, and so socially there's no conflict. Like that.
As long as he feels taken care of and sheltered, and he can actually do his service in
Even if he doesn't, he can, because if he has realization, then he can act. So if the shelter and that's not there, he can find a situation in which he can. What I'm saying, if he doesn't have that much realization, then you know, then he'll be in the same boat as the other person, and then technically it's not that much of a problem. There'll be social problem, but how you say, he doesn't have a problem of, how you say, applying his spiritual, you know, position, because he doesn't actually know it. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have that realization. In other words, that realization is there, he'll be able to understand what to do. So he'll be able to behave properly, he'll be able to make adjustments in his life to continue on that way, like that. If he doesn't, means he may have something here or there, then that's nice. But then also the senior men get that. Point is if one follows one's occupation, whatever it is, that's where you make your advancement. That the main point is if someone is a manager, he's only going to develop by managing. Like we see Srila Prabhupada, if someone was a manager and he had a problem in his life, as long as that problem was his own problem, it didn't bother others, then the remedy is he should continue as a manager. Like that. Otherwise, how will he purify himself? You know, someone's a cook, and so that's what he can do for Krishna. So by saying, oh, he's in Maya, he shouldn't cook, that's not going to purify him. So if he's in a state where he can understand that there is Maya, he should, you know, purify himself, then the method to do that is through cooking. You know, if he thinks his Maya is great and perfect and all that, then you may decide he shouldn't cook, because he himself feels he's already well situated. So there's this fine point there that still, that senior person, he's going to make advancement by that. So if he's arranged that the junior person has done an activity, that junior person gets spiritual benefit from it, that senior person will also make advancement. So they nourishes each other. That's why it's so important that the etiquette is there and the understanding of the culture, so that everybody's comfortable. You know, there shouldn't, like from that side. But it's a very, very unique process that all these different levels can all function at once, despite each other.
Well, in the 70s and 80s, when you joined ISKCON, you were supposed to just stay in your place and you stick it out there, and that's it. But nowadays we have what's called, you know, people are mobile. So yeah. If you don't like your authority or you don't like your temple, you just move. You just go someplace else, which results that entire countries become deserts. They become like deserted. Because everybody just feels, hey, the grass is greener on the other side, or, you know, they get more Mahaprasada.
But how long can they work on the greener grass principle? Because, you know, grass, if you look at it sideways, it looks green. Sure. You look straight down, it looks brown.
Yeah.
So, you know, it means they'll figure it out after a while.
That's superficial. Just may also say that in this place I can do my service, and in this place my kind of service is not really appreciated.
That is basically, ultimately it's up to the individual. See, is when you have the whole system is very surrendered to that, then you can kind of expect someone can stay in one place and it'll work. When you don't necessarily have, when that mood of that kind of mood is there throughout the system, then it makes it more that the individual has to take more responsibility of their own spiritual development. So that's why the importance of education. Is because if one is faced with that, one will have to make more one's own spiritual decisions, and one should have more of a foundation to be able to do that. Okay, so time's up. We'll continue. We'll continue from the same point tomorrow. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Generally, because the other one, he uses fancy words, and sometimes he poeticizes the technicalities to the point you don't catch the mechanics of it. so then probably better to go with...
I'll just print it out for you and then just put it up there.
Yeah, yeah. But you have to then also give him something printed for all the students. Yeah, yeah. Or better just put it in one of these. You have any more of these? Yeah, so put it in one of these and then just put it here, because then whenever we finish, we'll just start.
Maharaj, I'm ready to ask one question. Suppose someone is very ill, because demons also want to do the charitable activity.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Yes.
So what makes the distinction? It's whether Krishna is involved.
But suppose someone is ignorant about Krishna consciousness.
Then better he's pious. Better he's a nice demon. Because a nice demon generally allows people to be devotees. A not nice demon doesn't allow. You understand? So that's the whole point. Is in Duryodhana's kingdom, even though he's basically a demon, the Brahmins can all function, do the yajnas and everything nicely. So therefore, that's why piety is better than impiety. Because the piety then will allow for others who are doing devotional service, they'll be appreciated, because the pious person doesn't see the devotion, they only see the piety. So they'll say, I'm pious, they're pious, so this is nice, they'll think.
Yes, but is it true that someone who dedicates himself to some good material cause in ignorance and makes a sacrifice for this, he's still making some progress towards Krishna consciousness?
No, not towards Krishna consciousness, he's making progress upward. Means, yeah, but that's all. Not for Krishna consciousness is Krishna consciousness. It's just like, if let's say I study English, let's say I'm studying first grade, or I'm studying high school, or I'm studying university. Will that teach you? Will you learn anything about mathematics? No. So that's the point. Krishna consciousness is its own topic. So it has nothing to do with karma and jnana. That's the whole point.
Can I just have a short question?
As long as it's short.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just mentioned that, for example, you mentioned an example of a cook. If he's in Maya, but he's continuing with the service, he can purify himself. But for example, if he's in this lower modes and he's like cooking, so everybody's then eating what he cooks, and then they get influenced by this, isn't it? Or
the point is you have to be able to discriminate whether he's trying to purify himself or not. Because as it is now, most of your cooks anyway are uninitiated, first initiated, or are straight up front karmis anyway in most temples. Where are the second initiated devotees who are cooking exclusively for the deities in all our 400 temples? So therefore, even on that platform, it doesn't fly. You know what I'm saying? It means the people who could do it, they kicked out of the temple. And the people who shouldn't be doing it, they're having to do it. But he can't do it, he's not qualified. But they'll bring in someone who's less qualified. And the prasad will be inferior quality. The point is does the person want to... It means you walk in the first day in the temple. So are you pure? No, but your intent is. Therefore, that's what's taken. The intent is more important. So if his intent is to purify himself, then it's fine. If he thinks I'm quite fine the way I am in Maya, then there's no then you wouldn't have him cook. You know, you understand?
Yeah. Like for example, there is a person who he can cook nicely because he's like professional. He knows how to cook. But because he is like so much used to cook, there is no problem for him. He doesn't have to think about so much. So he can think about some other things while cooking because he's just so expert. So then it might be a problem because he might be meditating on something
else. There, but the point is even the sincere person who's not so expert at cooking with time will become expert at cooking and the same problem will come up. You know, so that's no reason to get rid of the good cooks and always put in new cooks. If you're doing that, then they should also replace the temple president every 2 weeks. Then I'll agree with the process.
The donation I gave you last week?
Yes, I did. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to say that any success we've had in our marriage is because of you.
Oh, okay.
From Manasamita lectures and everything like that.
Okay, very so good. Very good.
Not leaving. Okay. Also, with a question about the Christians. My sister-in-law is like a new Christian, and
isn't that what it says? Born again and again.
And we were I know you probably shouldn't discuss these things with them, but she was saying, God can't be a person, you know, like she was saying, yeah, he is a person, but he can't be like a person.
Yeah, well, we say the same thing. He's not a person like this, with this kind of body. He is a transcendental person, transcendental form, transcendental qualities. Mm-hmm. Like that, so he is a person. Otherwise, how does it work? How does he decide? How does he work out? So it's both at once.
They're actually impersonal because they think it's just a lie.
They're all impersonal. That's the thing, is that when it comes down to it, only actually the Vaishnavas are personal. You have individuals who may be very personal, but those, many times those individuals, if you check the history of the church, those are the guys that are censored or burnt at the stake. Like that. Very rare you have somebody get away with it.
And actually when they're so, like, they talk about love and everything, but it's actually because they have Jesus and he's a person that they can actually express their love.
Yeah. But then the point is he a person?
It's
like that. So this is the problem, is that they have some religion, they have some philosophy, and it works under, for them, most conditions, but for some conditions it doesn't work. And that's where then people start doubting, and that's actually how your Protestant and all these things came up, is because they can't answer. That's how your enlightenment came up, is because people were held back by the dogma of the church, that they couldn't answer questions because those ability to answer those questions had already been rejected by the neophyte devotees, you know, back like at, you know, Nicaea and all those different things, because karma, all those things were all kicked out.
Yeah.
So then you have a problem, is that things that they could have answered very scientifically, they couldn't, because if it was anything subtle, it was taken as the devil. And so, you know, you're dealing with a very low grade of intelligence here to discriminate between the physical, metaphysical, and spiritual, and how, being God's creation, they can all function together. And then you have good quality. What is good quality physical connected to the Lord? Good quality metaphysical connected to the Lord. But, you know, so that kind of discrimination is not there. It's a problem. So they run into their own trouble, and then therefore this age of enlightenment, so-called, and, you know, the secular state and all these different things, which shouldn't actually be there, but it's due to their lack of dealing with it. To them, it looked like it would make it easy management, but ultimately, you know, within 1,000 years or something, then they lost it.
Not much.
Yeah.
They've got the morality.
So it worked for them maybe 1,500 years or something, but then that was it. Then they lost real control. You know, I mean, individuals may be religious and they control the government, so there's still some effect. But it's not that the state has to work under God's laws.
They also say that God can't come here and put can't in front of God.
Yeah, but they say God's in the heart. You say that, they'll agree with that. So how did he come there? You know, so that's what is so contradictory, everything. It's not well thought out. If you could do it in a very nice, pleasant way and take a long time, you might be able to explain it to them. But you have to do it very, very pleasantly and very, very over a long period of time, because they have a lot of issues. A lot of issues.
I just couldn't keep on going with them. Like, I was just like, oh, this is so frustrating. Because my husband was just
main thing,
going.
Just talk the nice things, you know,
yeah,
love of God, this,
go.
That.
But
don't even bother whether they, you know, the point is, if you understand the person or not, still, you know, God is love, so we have to love him, we have to enjoy. You just distract it, and the emotions will catch their attention immediately.
Yeah.
And then you don't even bother with the technical.
Because they don't. Even like my brother-in-law's son said, he was about 7 at the time, and their youngest was about 2. I said, what about Gemma? She's 2. What if she dies? And will she go? You know, she hasn't lived. She hasn't lived. And his father said, oh, God knows. God knows.